Brian.
Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here with us today is RPG legend, Sean Patrick Fannin. How you doing, sir?
I don't know that I got 100 experience. Well, I've been at this a while. I may have actually gotten 100 experience points, so I'm probably on. I'm tired is what I'm great. I'm great. Hi, everybody.
For those of you who aren't aware, Sean is probably tired because he's doing the, and I'm going to say it wrong again, so you go ahead and say it.
It was the Shintar Legends Unleashed Kickstarter, which is for my epic high fantasy setting of Shintar.
And you guys have been kicking ass. You're at $18,000 out of a $10,000 goal with 11 days left.
Yeah, and we did with the way it's set up, we're fingers and toes crossed that we're going to have another big surge at the end, especially because we now have another handful of major bonus goals coming up. You know, I've got something that's about to be announced from Mythical Lairs, which is the 3D dungeon and interior set stuff that Kimberly did this awesome piece for a crossover thing between our two. I've got some special exclusive reveals for you today. Your audience will get to hear this before anybody else.
Sweet.
As far as other bonus goals that we've got lined up, I just nailed the deal down on a couple of those, so you know we can get into that. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, there's a lot of product to be done, and the Shintar All Stars have lined up. So I've got amazing names of people who want to write product. And novellas, and it's a very massive multimedia concept that we're going with, and I'm incredibly thrilled, especially since a lot of us are on board with my idea about changing the gaming world as we know it.
Oh yeah, because you guys are doing some living campaign stuff that's kind of new, aren't you?
Well, I almost want to avoid the word living campaign, not because I think it's a bad word, but because what they did. They being the RPGA and similar groups who did the living campaign stuff, it's their shoulders, they being the giants. I'm standing on their shoulders to reach for stars. Mm-hmm. But I am taking it quite a few steps further, and some would say, you know, further off the deep end and into crazy land. But I am doing a lot of things that your typical living campaign does not do. So I'm referring to it as the world's first massively multiplayer tabletop RPG with some really interesting twists, which is to say that every single person's character has a legitimate life within the setting. What they do matters. Their adventures matters. Their stories matter. Their GMs are affecting the world canonically. It's not everybody playing the same adventure. In fact, everyone is very much encouraged to play individual, unique adventures, and those unique adventures all matter and happen in the world.
Cool. And just for the listeners who might not have heard about Shintar, could you give them a brief elevator pitch on what's up with that?
Well, thankfully, I've had between my own ideas and my friend Basil, I've got a pretty good catchphrase for it, which is to say that instead of being about going down into strange hallways and killing kobolds for their copper pieces, you're doing, you know, truly epic high fantasy thing. So you're doing very much cinematic action adventure stuff, you know, as opposed to, you know, standard tropey kinds of things. And in fact, there was a quote that I did that I'd actually forgotten. I'd written, but recently Rob Davis of Rob's Game Group, who Evil Beagle Games, which is my publishing company, has partnered with for some really cool online stuff, he pulled this quote out, and it really gets to it. It's like, I created Shintar not for adventures, not for perfectly balanced parties of dungeon delvers, not for self-centered rogues or murder-bent warriors. Shintar is a land for heroes. Shintar is a crucible of legends. Leave the dungeons for the grave robbers and the mercenaries. You have greater, finer things to do.
Well, that's inspiring. And speaking of inspiration, Mr. Chris Birch from Modiphius Press just joined us.
Chris, hey, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. I believe you guys know each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Chris is the bud.
Sean was fantastically helpful when we started our Kickstarter.
And I'm seriously excited about what you're doing and looking forward to having your help helping us bring my Kickstarter home. And at the same time, Chris, right here online live, I want to talk to you about you becoming a Shinetar All-Star and maybe doing some stuff for Shinetar, as well as you've talked to me already about me doing some stuff with your company. I want to share the talent across the link. I'm really all about creating communities of talent, both amongst the professionals and the fans. So yeah. that's what this is all about.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Well, cool.
Fantastic.
So Shinetar has 11 days left, and you're bringing in high-end talent like Mr. Birch here to help do some additional writing. I'm guessing is some of your stretch goals, right?
Well, Chris and I haven't officially nailed an idea down, but right here, he knows now he has a standing invite. But I've already been very fortunate. I've got people like Eddie Webb, Jamie Chambers, Steve Perrin, who, of course, is, you know, you say legend. I'm a poser. Steve Perrin is a legend. he's the guy who did the original Call of Cthulhu. He's the guy that did RuneQuest. All right, so we're talking. Chris and I both are in his shadow, and happily so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott Benny, another great legend, as well. And then, some great authors like Aaron Rosenberg and Dan McGirt, Miles M. Cantier, of course, who did Suzerain. He and I are working very much together on this very transformative thing that we're doing, with opening up the world, not just for, fans to go nuts with and create their own things within the canonical reality, but now linking canonical realities. I guess I'll go ahead and jump into the special reveal just so Chris can, talk about how insane I am and try to get someone to come and pick me up and take me to an institution. because most publishers think I'm crazy for doing this, but I have nailed down a deal so that, not only have I opened up Shinetar to be shared by all the fans, but now officially, canonically, via various bonus goals, we will be linking Shinetar's reality to the reality of Suzerain, which is very much a metaverse, multiple realities thing. That'll all be tied to the universe of the Accursed RPG, which is Melior Vaya's thing, which they're going to be doing a Kickstarter for in the very near future, and I'm going to be doing some stuff for them. They're doing some stuff for me, but that's Ross Watson, John Dunn, and Jason Marker. And I just nailed the relationship with Pirate Press so that the Land of Oz will now be officially connected to all of these other realities. The Battle for Oz project is now officially going to be connected to Shinetar, Suzerain, and Accursed. So how insane is that? The Yellow Brick Road runs right through three other game realities. Welcome to the 21st century and the crazy that Sean has and the fact that four publishers, four settings, and there's another one that's in the works that if the person says yes, and I think he's very inclined to do so, that will blow people away because we're talking about a completely different setting this right now based on a different set of rules. But, this gets into the omnicosm thing that I was talking about, over the last couple of years, and it kind of went fallow, but it's coming back alive again, but in a completely different direction. It's coming in from the Shinetar side of things.
That sounds kind of profoundly ambitious, Sean.
Well, I've talked a lot about, and I think Chris would probably get a kick out of commenting on this. I was just talking to another podcast about what I consider to be the very definitive changes or the definitive paradigm shifts that happened over the history of the game hobby and the game industry. And I just as a matter of fact, before we got on here, came up with this list. So I'll briefly run through the list with you guys, and then we can talk about whether you guys think I'm right or wrong. But my list currently includes, to begin with, non-zero-sum gaming theories developed by Dave Wesley, which he applied to his Bronstein Napoleonic Miniatures game, which Dave Arneson was a part of. The next major shift is Dave Arneson meets Gary Gygax, and they both get involved with doing the fantasy rules for Chainmail. The next one is the dungeon that Dave created for his fantasy individual character things, which Dave McGarry, of course, went nuts for and did the Dungeon board game, but it also led to the dungeon that became Dungeons & Dragons. The Perrin Conventions, which is where Steve Perrin tried to clarify the insanity that was the not-quite-really-ready rules of the original stuff, which opened the door towards other groups doing their own homebrew stuff, which immediately led to stuff like Tunnels and Trolls and Chivalry and Sorcery and those first game releases that broke out of just being Dungeons and Dragons. Then the next one is the advent of desktop publishing, which allowed publishers to, you know, not have to have high-end, very expensive professional layout stuff or do really crappy cheap stuff at Kinko's and try to sell that. Suddenly you had the ability to do very professional presentations just from your home computer system. The next sea change was the RPGA and other organized play groups that unified communities and created the sense of a shared experience amongst large groups of people. The next major thing was the open game license and Ryan Dancy's network model. That was a huge sea change that changed how people saw the model of business. And it's like the game system is not the most important sellable piece. The game system is the communication language upon which you then sell product, and you also create relationships with other publishers so that you're all trying to help each other sell. The next thing is digital distribution, which, of course, is E23, DriveThruRPG, RPG Now, and all those guys. That massive change for publishers. Suddenly it became viable and a reasonable business where you could make a decent amount of money without having to have capital investment and have warehouses and stuff like that, or shove everything into your mom and dad's garage and hope you could sell the books. The next thing is Kickstarter, which completely changed the ability for publishers to reach their customers directly in a one-to-one relationship. You like my stuff. You can invest in my stuff. You get cool stuff, and we publish more stuff. And so those are all the major paradigm shifts from the beginning up to now. What I'm hoping to accomplish in my giddy, exhausted hubris is this Justice in Life concept, which is shared universes, canonical reality, and everyone playing in the same sandbox, and it all matters. I think that's another potential paradigm shift, and I'm kind of hoping to push that forward. So there you go, my crazy ideas.
Cool.
Am I nuts, Chris?
Always. You've got to have nuts ideas to try new things, otherwise nothing ever happens.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the way I felt in Biochem 101 back at Purdue University. I just got a huge info dump there, Sean.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's fine. I might be well processing all that. So, so check out Shintar. Now, this is going to come out initially for Savage Worlds rule set, right?
Yes. Savage okay. Worlds is the foundational line. In fact, is Accursed. Suzerain, Suzerain has its own game system too, but we are talking specifically about Savage Suzerain. Battle for Oz is a Savage Worlds thing. Of course, all the Shintar stuff is Savage Worlds. Having said that, there are people who are very interested and have approached me already about translating Shintar to other systems, and I do have a plan for this omnicosm idea of mine by which multi-statted systems, or multi-statted products are a part of it, but also creating a kind of easy to use Rosetta Stone kind of thing so that people can easily translate between one system and another as well as one setting and another to further enhance the ability for people to bring characters across into other settings and do fun stuff. So, that comes down into the whole trust the players and empower the GMs thing as opposed to trying to come with an absolutely perfect math model. And it's like, make a reasonable translation of the character. The GM says if they like it or not, and off you go, play. That's the big picture, but Savage Worlds is, definitely the focus. When I went looking specifically for a system to do Shintar in, and it took me years to come to it, and, Shane gave me Savage Worlds, it works perfectly for that cinematic action adventure thing that I'm going for. Like I said at the beginning, the whole Die Hard, or Lord of the Rings meets Die Hard thing, Savage Worlds delivers that perfectly. It's an incredibly easy game system to design for, and I know Chris can speak to that too. You can throw stuff together. I mean, it took me over a year to fail to define Shintar in D20 terms, but when Shane handed me over the first iteration of Savage Worlds, I had a working player's guide in 6 weeks. So, I was a decades-long professional working with both those systems, so that should tell you something. And Savage Worlds is the number three game system in the world right now. You know, there's no question about that. You know, you've got D&D, you've got Pathfinder, and then if you look at all the products being sold across the board, not just Pinnacle's, but everybody else's, Savage Worlds is the number three game system out there.
Yeah. Most of the game shops I talk to locally, Savage and Pathfinder are neck and neck, and D&D is somewhere in third place. But
that's interesting.
That is interesting.
Savage has a big fan base in Denver. There's a big convention that's Savage World centric here, and they're really deep locally, so that could be an inspiration.
Have the blessings. Yeah. So if you have my very dear friends Ron and Veronica Blessing out there, and Colorado is Savage country, no question about that.
Yeah.
I guess you've got a dip with D&D as well. Wait, you know, everyone's waiting on Fifth or D&D next now. If I'm not spending any money on other D&D products.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a lull. Once they announce D&D next, I mean, who wants to buy 4th Ed anymore? So,
there's a thing.
Well, hey, kind of segueing over to Gen Con. I know, Chris, looking at your website, it sounds like you guys have some big announcements for Modiphius, or you're going to be...
Yeah, actually, we did. Yeah, we've got an announcement of a license we're doing for another role-playing game next year, which is going to be the spring that we're kicking off. And then we'll be showing off some of the goodies for the Acts in Cthulhu Kickstarter.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. So people who come to Gen Con who are Kickstarter backers might have a chance to see that stuff a little early?
Yeah, they'll see some of the miniatures. We'll have some of the painted miniatures there. The investigator's bag that everyone's been raving about. And, some of the content as well. So draft layouts, that kind of stuff. So, the PDF is probably out then for the first two books. So there should be quite a lot for people to see.
Excellent. Okay, and just for any listeners who might not be aware, Act on Cthulhu is a really cool setting that Modiphius Press is doing that's sort of World War II and Cthulhu mashed up.
Basically, World War II with tentacles. It's because it uses Savage Worlds and Call of Cthulhu, so you can either play the sort of pulp two-fisted approach or the very dark, twisted, everyone loses kind of Call of Cthulhu version.
Everyone is so crazy or dies. I just said it's Call of Cthulhu. Everyone goes crazy or dies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I know we've got Mutant Chronicles that we're launching actually at Gen Con.
Giddy.
We're excited
about this.
I got excited today because the post came and I got all three original Mutant Chronicles board games that were out in the 90s from various people on eBay. Finally.
Well, Chris, if you want to tell them, I'm more than happy for you to tell them why I'm so excited about that.
Oh, yeah. So Sean's going to be writing something for us for Mutant Chronicles. So we're putting together a
hot
team of gifted people to help bring the world back to life. And we're really excited about it because we've been given this ability to reshape the world, and we're not changing it so much. We're kind of filling in all the gaps in the masonry in the Gothic wall that wasn't built properly last time. So there's a lot of the Mutant Chronicles universe that people haven't seen that we're going to be bringing to life, and we've got about 280 groups playtesting the new rule system at the moment.
Holy crap!
Yeah, it's been a bit crazy.
How do you even... I mean, sometimes when I'm doing playtesting and I have 12 groups, I get overwhelmed with the feedback.
We've kind of gone with the sort of fate idea of there's no NDAs. We just sent the rules out to everyone. Said, look, please don't pass it around, but we want you to talk about it. They've all been chatting away on our forums. We have then done a survey to see what people thought, and only people who respond to the survey get to play the next version. So, we're not just sending out free copies of stuff to everyone who are armchair designers who really aren't bothering to do anything for us. So there's obviously a bit of a drop down. I think we're down to, we started with 270. I think there's probably about a couple hundred groups still feeding back to us. So that process is going to keep going. But it's been fantastic because we've got some real numbers behind what people don't like and do like. And we've done lots of surveys over the course of, getting the Kickstarter going, and I found that actually asking, the fan base is one way to really learn what is going to help you be successful. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. I take a much more informal approach to that. I just basically say, let's yammer on Facebook and let's yammer on G+, and they'll talk to me, but still, he's absolutely right. The you know, engaging your fans because they're your proselytizers. There is no more powerful marketing machine than your fan base. And you know, once you bring in people and get them excited and engage them, I mean, that's part of the reason why the Kickstarter that I'm running runs the way it does. And let me be clear, I'm not presenting this as you guys are all wrong for not doing it this way. My way is the only way. The only reason why my way works is because A, I'm crazy, and B, I designed Shinetar from the beginning to work this way, and C, I'm not working with established IP that people have other expectations for. Shinetar is uniquely mine, has been uniquely mine since 1977 when I had a key on some borderlands and I didn't know which lands were bordered. And I built it top down, and I built it so that the map is full of places with cool names that live in exist in regions, and I know the basic stuff going on, but none of those places but most of those places are wide open for a GM to grab and define and do something more specific with. So my thing works the way it does because I designed it that way from the very beginning. That's because I was crazy from the very beginning about how I wanted to do this. But regardless of how you approach it, engaging the fans, getting their buy-in, letting them own a piece of the world in some way or fashion, letting them have a sense of ownership and belonging, that's always been a powerful tool for any interactive entertainment media. I mean, it was a huge thing that, as far as I'm concerned, was one of the most important senses of success for EverQuest. And I think you know, MMOs that have come after really missed the boat on allowing user created content to have more meaning and importance, which I'm kind of hoping one day to break the mold on that too. But, you know, another perfect example is Lantern City, which is Bruce Boxleitner's big project that he's an executive producer of. You should check that out if you haven't. Certainly everyone should Google Lantern City if they haven't. And it is it's going to be a television-type program. I'm not sure how they're planning on distributing it at this point. But they are seriously engaging the maker community, as they call it, the steampunk community, and inviting them to come up with unique designs and unique costume stuff and all this other stuff and to promote it into Lantern City and become officially part of Lantern City's designs. It's not quite the same as being able to put characters into the world and tell their own stories, but it's in that same vein. And it's the same thing for any authors out there who are really incorporating fan fiction and saying, you know, I really like this. As far as I'm concerned, y'all can treat this as being canonical. Whenever that happens, that person becomes one of the greatest proselytizers of that IP you'll ever ask for. So engaging the fans the way Chris is, engaging the fans the way, you know, myself and others are, that is the most powerful marketing tool there is in gaming.
Well, I certainly have to agree, and that's LanternCityTV.com for anyone who wants to check that out. I wasn't even aware of that product, and I'm an old Babylon 5 fan, so that's kind of cool. So, interesting. Sean, while we were talking about Gen Con, are you guys doing anything, any events related to Shinetar for Gen Con?
I'm running unique and exclusive events at Gen Con. They won't be run anywhere else. They had to do with... I'm so tired. But I do know for a fact that I did some unique events. And anybody who looks at the Gen Con event listing, I'm pretty sure they have to do with the builders. In fact, I'm almost certain they have to do with the builders. But they are unique events at Gen Con, again, not being run anywhere else. And they are considered part of the Justice in Life campaign. All the games I'm running at every convention here on out are Justice in Life games, which is to say that the character you play is able to be, is an official character in the canonical reality of Shinetar. You can register them onto the site, and you can play them in your home games. If your GM signs up as a Justice in Life game master, you can play them on the Roll20 virtual tabletop games that I and other authorized GMs are going to be running via Google Hangouts. So, your character that you pick up and play at Gen Con can become your character from here on out with their own story going on. And it unites the convention games with the at-home games for GMs who want to do that, with the online games, and any other venue I can manage at that point too. Whereas Justice in Life is officially launching before then, the events at Gen Con, as I said, are very unique and very exclusive to Gen Con.
How are you going to keep all, I mean, you're going to have some massive database with all the characters, or what's your plan to keep all this straight, because that's going to be a huge amount of data.
Actually, it's just a character sheet on a web page that the player is in charge of maintaining. I'm very, very big on everyone having responsibility, you know, for their own stuff. And I have a team called Raven's Flock. You know, the Elminster or Gandalf character, if you will, of Shintar is known as Sidaren or the Raven. That's one of his, you know, nicknames. Although he's not a white-haired, long-bearded old man. He looks like Adrian Paul as an elf, basically, if you're familiar with you know, Adrian Paul from the Highlander television series. That's sort of there's a metagame thing to it, because the people who are helping run this have a character presence that represents their sort of their environment character that they can role play with as they're helping manage this stuff. But at the same time, there is the actual management stuff. But it's a matter of just people looking at the reports and things like that are filed by GMs and players and scanning through them to make sure that nobody's trying to, you know, bring Daffy Duck into the world or crack the core of the planet or anything silly like that. And so that's just a matter of, you know, that cooperative look over there. Okay, that's cool. You know, no problem. And it doesn't contradict anything, so we can let it go. But the character page is just a character sheet that people update and fill out just like they do for their home games. So it really isn't, you know, I don't have to control it to the level that other people have thought that you have to control something like this. It's just one big, massive tabletop RPG with the same basic responsibilities and style, you know, and approaches that a GM and his gaming group would have, just on a much larger scale.
Okay, gotcha. Hey, Chris, you had mentioned you're going to be announcing a new license at Gen Con. I'm guessing there's probably no way in hell I could get you to talk about that right now, is there?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Okay. Can you give us a hint?
Not really.
Teasers are fun, man. You got to throw teasers out there.
Best to err.
Better stay quiet, otherwise someone will guess.
Yeah, best to err on the side of caution, especially when you're dealing with external IPs.
Yeah, it's going
to
be, on one sense, it might not be a surprise, but on the other sense, it might be, but anyway, there you go.
Okay.
Ah, well, see, now there's a nice teaser. that gives your super fans something to chew on and play with, and at the same time, all you can do is neither confirm nor deny anything from here on out. The thing is that builds the buzz, man. That builds the buzz.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, our big focus, apart from getting Acting Cthulhu out, is getting ready to show off what we've done with Mutant Chronicles. So that's the kind of main plan, and we're hoping to have a free open kind of beta introductory book with the first bit of rules and some pre-generated characters and a mission to go out for free on RPG Now, and you'll be able to pick it up for free in the mornings at Gen Con as well.
Okay. I am seriously stoked about that.
Yeah, so that would be the plan. It's kind of introducing the kind of new vision and some new artwork and things.
All right. So Mutant Chronicle stuff to look forward to. And just to touch on what Modiphius has released recently, you've started a new series of adventures for Acting Cthulhu.
It's a thing called the Adventure Series. So it's basically standalone adventures that don't fit into any of the big campaigns that we're doing. So it's where people have just written a particular adventure for us. And the first one, the Trailborg Monstrosities, actually features a recurring character called Seraph by a writer called John Houlihan. And he's already written another Acting Cthulhu adventure for him, and he's writing a series of novellas that we're going to be publishing as a compilation. And John's also kind of putting together some Acting Cthulhu fiction for us in a series, so that's coming together quite nicely. And then we've just put out Cogs, Cakes and Swordsticks just over a month ago, which is our kind of pulpy steampunk role-playing game.
Oh wow, cool.
Yeah, and it's very simple system, very easy. The whole idea is you can play on the play with a napkin and a sugar cube whilst you're in your tea and cake shop.
Huh. Right, and that's looks like you guys have a blog for that, cogscakeandswordsticks.blogspot.com.
Yes, I think that's probably Lynn Hardy's page. I mean, I'm not, she's editing the page on modiphius.com, so there's a page there with more artwork and updates on releases. We're just building up to release the first supplement for it, which is all about Atlantis, a big floating city commissioned by Queen Elizabeth. So,
Atlantis, sea in the clouds. Yeah, it's a so modifius.com. You can go to games, right. Cause Cakes and Sword Sticks. There's a lot more information right there. Excellent. Yeah. And I'm really interested in reading some of this Ektun Cthulhu fiction you mentioned. When are we going to start seeing that stuff come out?
Well, there's one novella out already on RPG Now, which is the Trailborg Monstrosities on Drive-Thru Fiction.
Okay.
And it's just a 60-page novella, basically following the events of the first adventure. The second of those stories featuring the same character, Seraph, is coming out probably in a couple of months. We've got another one that's just in editing at the moment, set in the Pacific. So we're kind of gradually growing that. I think, you know, I think fiction is great to help bring to life the worlds, but we're not a fiction publisher, we're a role-playing publisher. So we're trying to take those baby steps there rather than going, yeah, we're going to start releasing massive novels, because you know, we're not really set up to do to reach that kind of audience yet. So
it's a whole different game.
Oh yes, definitely.
All right, cool. There it is on your webpage, Ektun Cthulhu Fiction, the Trailborg Monstrosities.
So yeah. I got a question for you, Chris. Did you write the fiction?
Oh no, it's a chap called John Houlihan. He's an established writer, but he's also the editor of one of the big British video game websites called Computer and Video Games. So he's been a long time drinking, partying buddy, and discovered he had a mutual love for Call of Cthulhu and horror and World War II. So we started talking about him writing an adventure, and he'd already put a book out before. So I Very pitched cool. him the idea of writing for it, and he did. So it's great. And he's now writing a whole series of stories based around this one kind of mysterious character called Seraph.
Yeah, no, I hate to say it, I'm still not, I don't always remember that RPG Now sells fiction, so I hadn't even thought to look there.
Well, there's you have to realize there's multiple sites all tied to the same company. Of course, this is the guy who used to work for them kicking in here. Drive-Thru RPG and RPG Now are two faces of the same thing, which is the RPG sales point, but you also have Drive-Thru Fiction, which is a very continuously growing concern. As more and more people are finding that there's a lot of great material there that you can get in multiple formats, and it's a great distribution point that is focused to the specific marketplace that a lot of us want to hit. There's also Drive-Thru Cards, which launched recently. I was very excited about helping kind of, you know, kick that into play. And in fact, Evil Beagle Games, which is my house, has Colossal Clash on there, and we're going to be putting a bunch of other games up there. And it's POD is the big thing, is that you can bring, it's now possible to bring all those old card games, collectible card games and otherwise, back into play without having to do offset printing and warehousing them again. You can just put the PDFs up and put the files up, and people can get them again. You can either, you know, just put out your material just to have it up to be reprinted, or even create new material. Plus, we're, you know, like I said, we're making new games. Colossal Clash is a brand new game. And as a matter of fact, another little reveal that has not been discussed anywhere yet that we're doing for the Kickstarter. I've got a guy working on filling out these cards in the collectible card style, or basically playing cards size. Of basically, you know, monster and bad guy cards that are stuff that basically have all the stats directly from directly from Legends Arise and Shinetar Legends Unleashed, and we'll be putting, you know, that they'll be made available in PDF form as a bonus goal,
right.
For the Kickstarter, but as an add-on, we will offer a POD delivery version, which we will then, you know, so they will be available for sale for GMs as a GM tool via Drive-Thru Cards. So Drive-Thru Cards is a really awesome additional option for publishers to get some cool content out in that style. So, yeah, there's that, and then there's Wargame Vault for people who are doing the miniatures and wargamey stuff as well. So, yeah, they've got a whole suite of sites that one account pretty much covers you for all of them.
Well, excellent, excellent. Okay, well, hey, yeah, I'd love to check out. I've been curious about the POD stuff, but I haven't really had a chance to, mess around with the layout. And I'm sure there's some. I know the POD regular stuff on RPG Now can be a little tricky for the layout. I'm assuming the cards is probably, you know.
It's not as hard as you think. As a matter of fact, I just got my just today. I just got a text message from Corinne, The hardcover, the color hardcover is in. They just came in the mail today, so I'm getting ready. As soon as we get off here, I'm going to get on, put some pictures of it, and I'm going to activate the soft cover color interior and the hardcover color interior for Shinetar Legends Arise, which a lot of people have been waiting for. And it was actually a much easier process than I realized. Now, granted, it's helpful if you're working with people who know what they're doing, and Savage Mojo, which are my partners for all this, they really know what they're doing. But the process is definitely streamlined quite a bit. And Lee Ballou, my card game guy, never published anything in his life. And he put this process together, and he made it work. And he's learned how to do it. So now he's something of an expert. Be more than happy to have him work with anybody who wants to do any work along those lines. But it's a lot easier than you might imagine.
It's also they do tiles as well, because it's not just cards. It's floor tiles they're doing.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's very cool. Well, hey, guys, I have to get back to the shackles of my corporate paymasters.
No worries.
I've got crap tons of stuff to do for my Kickstarter, and you've got a lot of stuff to write to deliver to the people who pledged your Kickstarter.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I think
it's all good.
Chris will be busy for a while with that. So.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, hey, guys, I appreciate your time. Anything else you want to throw out there before we call it a podcast?
I'm looking forward to meeting up with you at the. You're going to be at Gen Con, so looking forward to meeting you up at the show, Chris.
And you.
Absolutely, brother. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
And anybody else? I have one more thing. I am an Annie Awards Dream Date again this year. The bid thing just went up. Mike, I don't have the link like easily right now, but it's very easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
I did post the link on my Facebook page, which I think you're friends with me on Facebook.
I think so, yeah.
So you want to grab that and put it in your show notes. But basically, you can bid to have me as your dream date for the NA Awards. And anybody who's ever been with me before will tell you, I introduce you to all kinds of amazing people in the industry. If you're a drinker, you'll get to drink. we'll have a great time. I always have something of a little after party after the awards. Plus, you get to win a bunch of stuff. And this year, not only are you going to get a copy of Shinetar Legends Arise signed if you want it, and a copy of Colossal Clash from us, but I'm probably going to have some other special unannounced prizes for you as well.
Okay, yeah, I just found that link on. You guys go through eBay for that. Okay, that's.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, the Annie Awards guys do.
Yeah.
I just use and abuse me. What the heck? I'm going to be at the Annie Awards anyway, so why not?
All right. Cool. All right, guys. Well, hey, thanks for your time, and
no problem.
All our listeners, we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Absolutely.
Cheers.